You're listening to the Bi Sci-Fi Podcast. I'm your host, Carrie Pack, and this is your home for queer positive speculative fiction. Welcome back. I'm so glad that you are listening to the Bi Sci-Fi Podcast yet again. This episode features authors Jennifer Sidaway and Jeff Adams. Jennifer is going to actually talk to us about world building, so going into NaNoWriMo. It's a great little mini workshop that she's giving us about the questions she asks herself when we world build. I actually took a workshop with her through the Florida Writers Association a little while back, and she did a mini workshop there on world building, and I just adored the way that she thought about it and how deep that really was. So I think for us speculative fiction fans and writers, it's a really great insight into how world building can be approached. Also, Jeff Adams talks to us about his Codename Winger series, and I love Jeff from the Jeff and Will's Big Gay Fiction podcast. So if you've ever listened to that, you're already probably fans of his. But I also wanted to talk about today the new Doctor Who. Hopefully you've seen this episode. If not, I would recommend fast forwarding a little bit so you don't get spoiled for it. But of course, I'm sure you know by now that the Doctor is now a woman, played by Jodie Whittaker, who if you saw Broadchurch, she was amazing in that. And I was really optimistic about this. And while I enjoyed the Peter Capaldi run of the Doctor, he played the 12th Doctor, if you don't count the War Doctor. And I really enjoyed the episodes, but wasn't a huge fan of his portrayal, and I'm not really sure why. I think it's because he was so angry. So I was really looking forward to a new Doctor, and B, a new Doctor that was a woman. My favorite thing about this, of course, is that it canonically makes the Doctor queer. We kind of suspected that, and they've mentioned before that Time Lords can regenerate into whatever gender they choose. But I really like that this canonically, the Doctor has been married multiple times to women, including Elizabeth I, and of course, River Song. I'm really excited. And of course, the show has toyed with queer characters in the past. And I do mean toyed because, of course, Bill Potts meets an untimely end, as does her love interest. I was cautiously optimistic about this. And I have to tell you, if you have not seen it yet, please go watch this episode. It was amazing. Jodie Whittaker sold me from the get-go that she is the Doctor. I really enjoyed her portrayal. There's some lightness to her that I think was missing from Capaldi's portrayal. And so I'm just really excited for kind of this new take on the Doctor. The extra layer maybe of empathy that I think will come from having a female iteration, just like we saw with the Master in the previous seasons, I think it will add some depth that we haven't seen. So again, if you haven't seen it, I would strongly recommend checking it out. Also, if you are doing NaNoWriMo, find me on Twitter. You can either find me through @BiSciFi or @CarriePack, which is my personal Twitter. F.T. Lukens and I were talking about kind of keeping each other honest and doing some writing sprints together. But if you're doing NaNoWriMo and you want, somebody to kind of keep you honest, we're certainly out there and can check in with you periodically to do that. I have got to. I know I've said this the last like three episodes and I've been working on it for a year, but finish up this horror novella. I've got a good rework of my outline to wrap it up, and hopefully that'll be out for the holidays so you can look for The Lights, which is going to be the title of it. I'm going to self-pub that baby and get it out there because it's got to. I want you to read it. It's going to be so amazing. If you've ever wondered about Christmas lights and if they can be evil, they are. But that's enough about me and my stuff. Let's talk to my guest. First up is going to be Jennifer Sidaway, and again, mini workshop. You're going to love it. Enjoy. My first guest is Jennifer Sidaway, author of the Earthwalker trilogy, and I'm so excited to have her here because she's going to talk to us a little bit about world building today. How are you doing, Jennifer?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be on your podcast and talk about books.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us a little bit about your Earthwalker trilogy for anyone who might not be familiar with it.
Okay, so the Earthwalker trilogy was my debut series. It was my first dipping my toes into the indie publishing world. And I had some thoughts rattling around in my brain for a long time, and I just put them on paper. But basically, it's a modern retelling of the Rumpelstiltskin fairy tale, but it's written through the lens of the child that was whisked away. So it's this girl who is unraveling the secret of her mother selling her to a demon lord and why he showed up in her bedroom and thinks he owns her soul now. And
That's
that,
intense.
yeah, so that story, that's how the story begins. And it kind of follows a three-book arc about her fighting back and trying to regain her freedom and breaking his control over her and basically earning her right to have her say in this contract.
That sounds really good. That sounds though too like what one of the things that we've talked about before on the podcast is kind of how you approach world building kind of in layers. You always are starting with a baseline, and sometimes you're applying layers of paranormal or fantasy to our existing world, and then sometimes you're creating from scratch. So did you start like did you build your world from scratch here, or were you kind of like, okay, I'm going to use the real world as a baseline and then add this level of fantasy and fairy tale on top of it?
Well, it was very, very early for me, so I didn't even think in the context of creating my own world. So that's why
Right.
it's paranormal. It is set in Mobile, Alabama. I lived in Pensacola, which is about a half hour drive away from Mobile. So it was basically my wheelhouse. I knew the region, I knew what I was talking about. And so I just created this character and dropped her in the center of this place. I mean, I grew up in the South, so I feel pretty comfortable with like the dialect, the regional habits and cultural norms that happen in Alabama, Florida, Georgia, that general area.
Yeah, I feel like that is kind of a commonality. I think a lot of times with people who start with paranormal and urban fantasy and things like that is that they kind of start from where they know. Even when we don't really think necessarily about world building, we're using our own world as a baseline because that's what we know. And
Absolutely.
so you can add those little when you do tweak reality, so to speak, you're kind of you're operating from somewhere you're very familiar with, so it's easy to kind of create those little nuances.
Absolutely. I think it's, at least for me, it is really hard for a part of myself to not bleed into the story. I mean, you write what you know. So the things that have been part of my life experience will inevitably, make a little nod to that part of my personal history in my books and in my life. So yeah,
Right.
absolutely.
So does your approach to has your approach to world building changed through the course of writing that and kind of moving on to other things?
I think that it was a great learning experience. It took me 8 years to rattle around these ideas and put them out because I didn't have a firm grasp on what I was doing. So that was all for book one. But once I had got my, walking legs and I kind of understood where I was going with this, book two took 4 months. So that was a huge, like a very steep learning curve.
Right.
So when it comes to world building, I talked about this a little bit in the focus day at the Florida Writers Association,
Right.
but it's always just having a concept and taking it to the next level. So if you present a plot point, you have to ask the what if. How does that bleed into the bigger picture of what's happening, right?
Right.
So the example I used before is if you have faster than light travel, what does that mean? How is that going to affect trade? How is that going to affect the passengers on board? Do they have like biological responses to moving at that speed? Because G-force is a thing. I mean, when they were creating the space program, they had these tests about pilots who would have to go at sonic speed, and they started bleeding from their eyes because of the force of the
Right.
wind and the pressure. So if you have faster than light travel, that's a whole other ball game. So it's just taking those concepts, going to the next level. With Wynn and her mom, we had this Rumpelstiltskin philosophy like premise, right? So if a woman were to sell her child to a demon, what does that say about her? What would drive a woman to make that kind of a choice? Because it is a big thing to do. Like, that's not something a person would do flippantly. So that has a story in itself, I think.
Right.
And what would the demon see in her to make that bargain with her? What does he stand to gain by acquiring a child? Why would that have any appeal for him? So you have to answer those questions. The other thing I wanted to talk about in my book was, okay, so there's this premise of a witch, right? So I was having this argument with my friend about why witches were scary. Why are they terrifying? Because when you think of a sorcerer or a mage, you don't have the same like negative connotation, because a sorcerer is just, yes, you cast magic, but a witch has this like nefarious, insidious kind of feel to it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So why is that? And I asked why. Why is that so? And I came to the conclusion that it's because she has given up part of her humanity. There's this like unspoken rule or unspoken, reaction people have, because there's a general understanding that she has given up part of herself to get that power. And if you give up part of your humanity, that says something about your character.
Right.
So it's not just the fact that she has power, it's the type of person with the power. And those are combined. So it's a desperate person who has nothing to lose and is willing to make that kind of sacrifice. So I just think that that adds a layer of depth to a witch's character. Because when I
Right.
think of, like, when you have Vampire Diaries and these other depictions of witches where they're good witches, I don't really consider that a witch. I consider that fae. It's drawing energy from the earth. It's drawing magic from the world around them instead of being bestowed on them by a third party.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I think too that's about how what mythology of the witch or how much realism you put into it too, because if you look at like historically, if you look at like why witches were scary and things, you're right. It was about, witches were like viewed to have made a deal with the devil, right? And
Yep.
like, but if you also look at like modern like Wicca, then that's more of a like you're talking about like that's more related to like fae where you're dealing with the earth elements and things like that. So
Exactly.
even making a small choice like that, do you go with the, like the puritanical version of a witch, or do you go with the more modern view of a witch, and how does that affect every aspect of what world you're building and what that means for the characters themselves? I think that's a great way to look at it.
Well, and also, if you're having this magic bestowed on you by a third party, like Michelle has her contract with Aiden, aka Lucifer, a demon lord. She actually doesn't have any power of her own. She has been given power by this demon, which means anytime she casts a spell, anytime she tries to tap into that power, she is renewing that relationship with him.
Yeah.
She is triggering his power over her. And over time, that will affect you. It will affect her heart. It will affect her person on a very, very core level.
I think for me, like that's where I get tripped up when I'm trying to world build because it's like there's so many what ifs, right? And my brain will be like, but this, it's like I'm doing a choose your own adventure in my head while I'm writing it. And you know, it's like it does. It's like I think world building is one of the places where it really is beneficial most of the time to be, you know, a plotter rather than a pantser, right? Where you sit down and you really think about these things. Because if you do like I do and think about them while you're writing, you know, sometimes I've had to do major rewrites before because I realized I set up a world and then kind of broke the rules of it without reason. So I had to go back and be like, okay, do I really want this rule or should I do I need to rewrite this so that it fits the rules of the world that I've created?
Oh no. Yeah, I think that rewriting and discovering your own plot holes by asking those questions, I mean, it's painful at the time because you never want to kill your darling that you spent, you know, the half hour, an hour writing. But the story really will be better for it. It's going to be richer, it's going to be more concise. And those hard questions about what if are very, very beneficial. And at least for me, I spent, like I said, I spent 8 years with thinking about this book, but that world is the serial location for 11 books. You have Wynne's story, and then I'm going to write her mother's story as well, which is a 4 book, and then there's the Daughters of Night, which is 7. So it's like there's a lot of payout to that. By taking the time to create a good world that you can put more than one book. Because readers love serial books. They love having more than one story that takes place in the universe. It's a place they want to live.
Well, especially in speculative fiction, any kind of fantasy or paranormal, like people want that world building. And you know, when you say things like that too, where you talk about that, where you've put that much thought into everything like that, you start to understand too, like why Tolkien built the world that he did and why George R.R. Martin has these huge, gigantic books and is taking forever to write them. Like it's you've basically, you know, you're kind of creating this world from scratch and just playing around in it, you know?
Yeah, I believe that like deep in my gut. If you put in the time to create a good world, then you're gonna love it and your readers are gonna love it. And when I read, I can tell if an author has thought long and hard about a situation because it your emotional investment into a universe or into your story does bleed through into your writing.
Oh gosh, now I'm scared that you've read my stuff. No, I am. Well, actually, it's funny because in the present tense, you know, because there's time travel, I had to think really hard about how that would play out, right? Because I had very early on this idea that it would be a mental illness that would trigger the time travel, but what scientifically would cause that to happen, right? So I started like researching like literal time travel, which scientifically is possible. I mean, we time travel anytime we fly in an airplane. You know, anytime that you're further away from the center of gravity, you're traveling, you know, at a much slower pace. So you're kind of you end up with these different time frames, although we don't notice it because it's so minuscule when you fly in a plane, right? But I started to think about, okay, well, how would that happen? You know, if you're having this mental disorder, what is going on in your brain that would allow time travel to occur? And then ultimately, I kind of connected that with faster than light travel would be that if your brain synapses fired faster, you know, you would be able to, in theory, be able to travel, you know, and so that's kind of where it came from. But it was very loose. It wasn't like, you know, I didn't sit down and like make rules for it. I just thought, well, that could, in theory, explain maybe what's going on there.
No, I love that. I think that's brilliant. And I haven't read your book yet. I'm really looking forward to it.
That's
I
right,
have
you got
been
it.
swamped.
Oh, I know. I'm like so far behind. Have you read anything else recently that you loved, or are you still just kind of digging through your own world? Sounds like you got your hands full with your own world.
Yeah, I've done a little bit of genre hopping, and I'm working on a Highland romance right now. It's about pirates. So I haven't had a whole lot of time for reading. The most recent one I did was Kip and the Grinders by Zach Chopchinsky, and it is phenomenal. I really, really enjoyed it. The character is snarky and swears a lot, and she's got these rainbow colored dreadlocks, and she's fabulous. and I want to be her best friend.
I love when we read a book and we really kind of get attached to a character. You know, I think that helps us a lot more. It's funny. I've got such a stack of things that I want to get through, and it's like I don't know if you've read Heidi Hellig's The Ship Beyond Time. It's really good, and I have the sequel. I've had it literally on my to be read shelf. I have a shelf, not a pile. And I've had it there for like almost a year now, I think. And I'm just like, I want to read it. I want to read it. But I have like so much, you know. And then you read for research, and you read for, you know, you need to know what's in your own genre, and you know, and you've got to sit down and write. And it's like, God, life gets away, man. It just gets away from you.
It really does, and especially when you are an author and you spend hours at a time staring at a screen writing your book, kind of the last thing you want to do is pick up someone else's book, because I've been reading all day, like
Right.
editing and working on this thing. So it's kind of hard on that level too.
Well, and you either get hypercritical of your own work or hypercritical of the other author's work, and neither one is good for creativity. Like, you know, it's you either feel like a jerk for critiquing someone else, or you get yourself into a hole where you're like, I suck and I cannot write, so I'm not going to. So
Oh my
that's,
gosh,
yeah.
yes, 1,000 times yes. And I feel like a monster. I'll be like, you kind of mentioned this one thing in chapter one, and then you never mention it again. So was there a point to that? And like,
Yeah.
I've done that myself, and I was like, oh,
Or like
I should fix that.
I found a I realized I had a minor plot hole in the present tense that I'll see if you can pick it out when you read it. But I had it wasn't huge, but it was, if you were really paying attention, you'd be like, wait a minute. And what was really great was I sat down to write the second book, and I'm going through all these different scenes and what I wanted to revisit, because I added a point of view. And of course, with time travel, you've always got the ability to be able to revisit anything. But I also got to revisit things from another character's point of view, and I was able to work in my plot hole and turn it into part of the time travel. And I was never so grateful for time travel in my life, because otherwise I wouldn't have been able to fix that. It would have been just sitting there bugging me for the rest of my days. So I'll never I'll I keep telling people about it. If I didn't tell them, they just think I was a genius, you know. But
Well, I think that's the great thing about incorporating magic or something like that into a book, because you can literally say, a wizard did it. Like, magic. Don't ask questions. Don't think about it too hard.
Or like with time travel, you know, you just create a paradox. You're just like, well, she knew to do it because she did it, or something. You know, you pull a Harry Potter casting a Patronus charm at the end of Azkaban. You know, you're like, oh, okay, well, I already knew to do it because I already knew I did it. Okay, sure. Are you your own grandfather too? Because that causes problems.
Yeah, it does.
But yeah, no, absolutely. So if people wanted to find you online, where would be the best place for them to get in touch?
I have a very active Facebook presence,
Okay.
which is Jen Sidaway on Facebook. I also have a reader group that I'm trying to build up, so they're welcome to join my reader group. I do swag giveaways, and I'll give away ebooks like all the time. And I'm also on Instagram at Jen Sidaway Author. On Insta.
On the Instas. Yes. Well, it's been so much fun talking to you. I love talking about world building, and I had so much fun at the workshop that you did. So it's one of the reasons I wanted to have you on. So I want to thank you so much for sharing your brilliance with us today.
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. World building is my shtick. I love tossing around ideas, and like, it sounds aggressive, but I like challenging authors, like in a verbal setting when they're in the early stages of creating a universe, to like, wait a minute, what about this? Like, oh yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Because I love, like, I think there's a term for it in journalism where it's like the white team and the red team, where you have the first group that collects the data and creates it, and then you have the white team that reads it afterwards, who is not involved before, who tries to punch holes in it. They go out of their way to try to like, is this airtight? Is this solid? And I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you on that. But yeah, it's been a lot of fun, and I hope maybe we'll have you back on again too to talk about it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just being selfish. I'm like, I want to talk more about world building, but I just think it's great. And I thought too, with going into NaNoWriMo too. A lot of people are going to be starting new novels, so it's a great time to talk about world building.
Oh my gosh. So let's talk about NaNoWriMo for like 2 seconds.
Sure.
If there are authors out there who are getting ready to start a book, or there are authors who are discouraged, or there are people who are thinking about starting into the in the author universe, I have one piece of advice, which I cannot claim because I heard it at UtopiaCon from Lauren Campbell, but it is no choice, and that is hold on to your dream because no one else is going to do it for you. You will get discouraged and you're going to have naysayers, but if you want it, you've got to hold on to it. Do it for you, and you deserve to have that happy.
Yeah.
So hold on tight to
Absolutely. I think that's a great note to end on. Thank you again.
it. Oh, thank you, Carrie. I'm more than happy to come back anytime.
Thanks. My next guest is Jeff Adams. He's the author of the Codename Winger series. Book 3, Audio Salt, is out November 27th. He is also the host of the Jeff and Will's Big Gay Fiction podcast, so you might know him from that. And I'm really excited to finally have him on my podcast. How are you doing, Jeff?
I'm good, thanks. I'm really excited to be here.
Yay, I am too. I mean, I love doing this. You and I must be just I'm what you call like an ambivert, you know, like where I'm mostly introverted, but occasionally I'm just really chatty, and I think podcasting is a really great way for me to get that out. So I don't know.
Podcasting is a totally great way to do it because you're not necessarily face to face with the person and you can just talk, but it's like you're not really kind of in that moment of having to, do the whole face to face and, put on all the extroverted vibes.
You just uncovered the secret to why I don't do video like you do.
Unless you're on my show and then I make you do
Right.
video.
Well, no, I mean, you don't make us. I just do
That's
it because I
true. I
like
don't.
I like to see someone's face if I can, but I just don't want to have to get up and do my makeup and hair every time I want a podcast. So
That's a
you just
good
discovered
point.
my secret. Your book is about a hacker, and I love I read I was reading up on it a little bit, and I love the tagline from this. It's like high school student, hockey player, computer whiz kid, covert agent. And I love that. It's like such a good juxtaposition of things. What inspired you to write a book series about a hacker?
The series has, I love the origin story for the series. So it was GRL in Chicago. And so, of course, the book manages to have its birthing at a romance conference, even though it's not a romance at all. I was talking with Claire London and Z.A. Maxfield, and my husband Will was also there. And we were just kind of talking about career and what to do and thinking about series. And I've always had a thing for young adult fiction because I think it's so important that teenagers have books where they can find themselves as any number of characters, whether it's more romantic or action adventure or some suspense or, post-apocalyptic or whatever it may be. Find your person in a book somewhere. And also over the course of the conference, there was somebody, I'm pretty sure they were an attendee, although they might have just been staying in the same hotel, that their phone had a Kim Possible ringtone. Now, for those who don't know, Kim Possible is a Disney animated series that was on back in the 2000s with a teenage heroine who went around saving the world. She was essentially her own one man operation, well, one woman operation to, go around and defeat the evil bad guys.
Excuse me, there was Ron Stoppable, a naked roll mat, roll, mole rat. I can't even say that. Mole, naked mole rat.
Yes, Rufus.
And yeah, and she had a hacker friend.
And she did have a hacker friend, but basically that was all her show.
Right.
And that ringtone was like, And that just kind of clicked things. And by the time I came back from Chicago, I'd actually written the prologue to book one, which was essentially Theo introducing himself to the audience. And it went from there. By the next GRL, I was pitching the idea to Harmony Inc. And they bought into it. And by the next GRL, the first book came out.
You move fast. Are you a covert agent?
Maybe. I can't tell you that.
Yeah, you'd have to kill me.
But all of that, and then there were a lot of other influences too, like the TV show Alias. I really loved that show because Sidney Bristow had this insane covert agent existence, but tried so hard to balance a normal life with her friends and a boyfriend and so on. And that didn't always work out well across I think it was 5 seasons of that show.
I just saw an article, and I don't know how much, but apparently they're thinking of a reboot of that, of Alias.
That'll be so
Literally
hard.
just this morning, like while I'm drinking my coffee, thinking, I've got to be on in about 20 minutes. But seriously, that's really weird coincidence. But yeah, I just saw something about it, and Jennifer Garner is going to be involved apparently. I don't know. I'm
Okay, then
reading.
I have a little more faith in it then, if
Yeah,
she's gonna
I didn't
be
read the
on
article,
board.
so that's literally all the information I have. Maybe I'll dig it up and link to it in the show notes. But yeah, crazy.
And Kim Possible is getting rebooted next year,
Right.
with a live action
With a live action,
attempt.
if they don't get her hair right, I'll be really angry. Like Kim Possible, like as far as cartoon heroines go, had some really great hair.
Yes,
Let's
she
just
did.
say she
I mean,
really did.
everything about that show, I have managed to, over the years, get them all recorded because they've never come out on DVD.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's so funny. You and I, neither of us were of the correct age for that when it came out, but you and I apparently both know a lot about it.
It really struck me, and I don't know if it was just, it was super smart storytelling.
It really was.
I'm kind of into like the whole save the world, regular person saving the world, all the time. And she did have, great sidekicks. And of course, there's a lot of Wade in Theo, her sidekick, who was the hacker kind
Right.
of guy, because he always had a gadget and he always had a little something to go, track down and find people and stuff. And so, yeah, there's Theo's made up a lot of Wade, a little bit of Mr. Robot, especially in the later books, because Mr. Robot wasn't on yet by the time when I was writing the first one.
Right. It's interesting because I think maybe what's appealing about it, and what for me appeals a lot about YA, especially when you have like Chosen One or Save the World kind of things, is like I really enjoy anything that kind of reflects teenagers aren't as dumb as we treat them in the real world. I mean, obviously, I don't think we have a overabundance of teenage genius hackers or anything, but there are kids out there that have the imagination and drive to do bigger things than I think we give them credit for. And so I think the great thing about YA is when it shows these kids in these extraordinary situations kind of rising to the challenge. Because I really do. I mean, you saw what these kids in, Parkland, they're teenagers, and a tragedy befalls their school, and they become immensely politically active and really taking on the establishment and doing exactly what we write about them in YA doing. So
Yeah,
proved
I
our
think
point.
that's a great analogy, actually, because and I think society today, I think we even more discount what teenagers can do and do in some cases. And Parkland's a great example. We just think of them as being, kind of closed up in their phones and going off and doing crazy things with their friends. And but there are some who are really out there, pushing to get themselves to whatever their next level is, whether it's, becoming political activists or looking at running for office or, doing something crazy and awesome with computers or, whatever that is for them, to go off and pursue that.
Yeah, like being a world-class gymnast or something. I mean, they just
Yeah.
these kids have drive. I mean, I still don't have that drive. I'm a middle-aged woman. I don't have that drive. And also, I think too, when you also add on the extra layers of us writing queer books, that anything where a kid gets to just be incidentally queer, right? They're gay. They're trans. They're whatever part of the acronym they fall on, they're. Identity isn't just that. And one of the things I continually hear, especially in YA, is that actual teenagers, not just fans of YA, because there are a lot of us out there, myself included, But actual teenagers that are reading in these genres want books where the characters are just happen to be queer. They're not identified by that. They're not having a struggle. It's just part of who they are because that's the reality they're living in.
Exactly. That's what I wanted to do with this book. I have a previous series that I did the whole teenager coming out story thing. And that was great. And coming out books are so important. And I'm not discounting them at all. But for this series, I wanted it to be where Theo's being gay was like the least interesting thing going on in his life.
Isn't that always the way?
But he's also very proudly out. He has a boyfriend. There's never an issue that he is gay with anybody. So I made a little bit of a perfect world there because even though it's set in Boston, I mean, there are homophobes in Boston, I'm
Yeah.
sure. But I don't choose to have him encounter those. But also, book two, Schooled, also deals with some bullying themes, but it's not homophobic bullying.
Nice. I mean, bullying's not nice, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, I well, it sounds like too that you kind of approached your world building in a way that, you know, we have the choice to set our books in worlds that can be anything we want to be. And for me, writing speculative fiction, that's what I love, you know. And I think being able to take away layers of harm to me is one of the greatest things that we can do, right? When a character no longer has to deal with the judgment of the outside world over being gay, you know, that gives him so much more. Like you said, it's the least interesting thing about him, so why not play in that world, you know?
Yeah, it's I like having that world. And I even do that world sometimes in the romance that I write. I construct my little contemporary world, but I eliminate, as you noted, those layers of the areas where you can get hurt by society and go for the more perfect world.
Yeah. What defines speculative fiction for you? Because obviously we're talking about your book about hacking. It does take place kind of in a contemporary setting. So, you know, what did you put other layers on that to kind of make it more fantastical, or did you really try to root it as much as you could in the real world?
I have often considered the books to be rooted in a reality that is kind of similar to what James Bond operates in. Those books are very much of whatever year that they're, or those movies rather, are very much of whatever year they tend to be made in. And really, to me, some of the places that they get a little extraordinary are around the gadgets. So there are tools that Theo has at his disposal that I suspect don't really exist. I try to root them as much as I can, seeming like they could be there, because I don't want to make it totally over the top to be like, damn, right, that doesn't happen. But he's got, I mean, he's got an iPhone that does ridiculous things because the agency he works for, and even he himself, have adapted it over time to have apps that the agency uses. Well, actually, I won't give away the one of them that is in the opening of Audio Assault, because that would be, why would I do that?
Yeah, you have to buy the book, okay?
One of the ones that I'll talk about that I think three. This is the problem of writing a series so close together, because like these books have come out every 6 months.
And your
You
people
have to
are
think
together.
about like, which did I write that in this book or that book? And it's especially weird when you're promoting one book, finishing edits on one, and then there's the one that's out kind of in the world at the moment.
It doesn't even help when you space them out. I wrote mine 2 years apart, and I'm like, was that in the sequel or was that in the first book?
Yeah, it's like,
I have to reread them both again.
I'm not, yeah, this tech actually gets introduced in the third book, but it's not as spoilerly as the other one. Contact lenses that have heat vision and night vision and can do other things to help him, see wherever he happens to be.
Right.
And actually, those contact lenses ended up in book three, because on the cover of book one, which is Tracker Hacker. The Aaron Anderson, and I have such a great cover artist with Aaron because he's made four gorgeous covers for these
Yeah.
books. He put a little electronic kind of symbol thing over Theo's eye, just because all of the books kind of have this techie background thing going for them. And I'm like, that's pretty cool. That could be contact lenses. And then suddenly, as I'm writing books, I'm like, Theo gets contact lenses because of that.
I love that. I love when our real world experiences totally, start to bleed into our fiction, because that's, I don't know, the more, even when we're talking about sci-fi and fantasy and gadgets and things like that, it's like they do work better when they're rooted in reality, is this going to be is this is, are you going to write more books in this series, I guess?
There is a fourth book that I'm actually in, headed towards final edits on now. It'll come out sometime in the spring of 2019,
Nice.
and it's called Netminder. So I finally have a title that also plays a little bit on the hockey side of Theo's life. As you might guess, something with the internet also kind of plays into it. So I got the kind of the double meaning
Love
title
it.
going on there.
Yeah.
That book will be the final of the Winger series.
Well, you have to end eventually. I mean, we can't all go on forever, although I'm sure fans would love it, but
Well, to be honest, it may not be the end of seeing Theo,
Oh, okay.
but it is the end of the Winger series because I've told that story, and it was pitched as a four book series, and I've considered ways to continue it, but it's a great place to kind of wrap Winger's story.
So you are probably one of the busiest people I know. I don't know how you find time for all this, because all these books, I'm like, I haven't put out anything, and I've finished up my last book last year. Like, what the heck? But I know because of your podcast, like you read and you do a lot of other things. Is there any spec fic that you've read recently that you were really into?
I'm actually in the middle of what I would consider some spec fiction right now. It's a book called Someday by David Levithan, and it's the sequel to one of my favorite all-time books called Every Day, which people also may know because it was actually a movie earlier this year. I think it got lost in the theaters a little bit because Love, Simon came out like 2 weeks after it.
Ah, yeah.
There is an entity called who calls I'll go with themselves. A. And every day, A ends up in a new body. From
Yes.
midnight to midnight, A occupies a body. A has done this his entire, well, their entire life, body hopping. Initially, it was confusing because, why am I in a different body every day? And then eventually, it's like, I see what I'm doing. I will do no harm while I'm in this body. I will get this body through its day. And the chapters of the book are actually labeled like day 6887 because
Right.
that's the day. And then one day, A ends up in the body of the boyfriend of Rhiannon. And A falls head over heels for Rhiannon and does everything he can every day after that to get back to her. And eventually he tells her what they can about the way that they are and the body hopping thing. And it's amazing to me how David Levithan created the world where this can happen.
Right.
And the love story that's made there, because you can imagine hopping bodies every day, you're in male, you're in female, you're in someone who's trying to present, is presenting as trans or is gender fluid or, is African American or is
Right.
Latino or is, paralyzed or diabetic or whatever. And there were certain rules. The hopping could only happen through in a limited distance. So if A was in, some town in Connecticut, because I can't remember where the book is set exactly. Odds are A will just hop around within that town, but you can't inhabit the same body twice, blah blah blah. But one of the things in the book that is one of the more comedic moments, but also where he realizes he's really starting to screw up, is that he prevents a boy from going to Hawaii with his parents for vacation because he knows if he goes to Hawaii, he is not ever going to be near Rhiannon again.
Right.
Because the next day he'll flip in Hawaii and then he'll be bouncing around Hawaii or
Right.
wherever, if he's in another vacationer, he'll end up somewhere else. So someday picks up after every day. Unfortunately, spoiler, they end up separating because they can't figure out how to continue to make it work at all for obvious reasons. So it picks up at some span after they have separated, and A is now across the country in Colorado from where she is. And I'm about 20% in, but there's also a nefarious aspect because there's another, I'll call them body hopper, who's there, who is not as do no harm as A is.
That sounds intriguing, actually.
So I'm fascinated, and I've fallen right back into this world. And again, I kind of, bow at the altar of David Levithan because every book he does captures an aspect of queer existence so well, and there's certainly aspects of queer existence here, and having to bounce around, especially in every day where, Rhiannon had to come to grips in some ways with, I love this person, and today they are this way, and today and the next day they're the next way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think too, it's you were questioning, you said you didn't think of it as spec fic right away, but it's like it really is, 'cause it's like it's putting that what if on reality, right? So like for me, that's you only need that tiny, tiny layer of speculation to make something sci-fi or fantasy, or it's just a tiny little twist on what we know as reality. And even something like, you made me rethink James Bond, because it's like, even though that's a spy novel genre, right? Spy movies, that kind of thing. All those gadgets make it sci-fi.
A little bit,
It's a
some of
tiny
them. I
bit.
mean,
It's a tiny, tiny bit. But it's just enough that it's adding that layer of fiction, to that world of technology that gives it just enough to for my taste to kind of bump it into that area. So it's like, so something like where you're body hopping, right? That's not necessarily science fiction in the sense of space opera, but it certainly is fictitious science that we don't know. I mean, I assume we don't have. That would be kind of, I feel bad for anybody that might have that issue, but yeah, I mean that to me is, and it's, I mean, it's like, I wrote that time travel series where it's just a small layer on reality, right? It's, and it's like when I say sci-fi, people are like, okay, are there spaceships? And I'm like, no, but there's time travel. So, it's kind of all in the interpretation. And for me, what attracts me to spec fic is the what if.
Yeah, and it really opens up, as you noted, like so many worlds. Because when we were talking initially, back when you were on my show last, and we were talking about yours, like I wasn't sure I had spec fic, but yeah, I mean, Winger. Because of who he is and what he does and the gadgetry he uses, and even the computer layer. I mean, I try to root his computer skills in reality, but I'm sure I skate over those lines occasionally of what we can currently do with our tech. Although maybe not, because there's some scary stuff that goes on out there in computer land.
Yeah, seriously. I'm not sure how much of that is fiction, right? When you're dealing with hacking, but certainly pushes our technology, definitely. So who do you have coming up soon on your show? Can you give us any glimpses or spoilers of who's going to be a guest on the Big Gay Fiction Podcast?
So as you and I are recording, we've got the Gay Romlet Retreat coming up next week, and we're doing a lot of interviews there. Some of them will go out live, and one of the ones I'm super excited about are we're having the authors of the Devil Take Me anthology, which is urban fantasy. And the authors who'll be joining us on site are Reese Ford, Jordan L. Hawk, T.A. Moore, C.S. Poe, and Jordan Castile Price. So that's going to be really awesome to have those folks together. And also, Jen Hale is an author in that, but unfortunately, I don't believe she's at GRL, so she can't join us for that interview. We're also going to be talking with TJ Klune, who has an amazing book that comes out. I believe it's the week of the 22nd, called The Bones Beneath My Skin, which is. I haven't figured out how I'm going to review this on our show yet. Because I've been holding my review to the week that the book comes out,
Right.
but it's an amazing kind of amalgamation of he categorizes it as like his attempt to write a 90s kind of sci-fi actiony thing, but to me it's got elements of like Stranger Things and ET and Close Encounters
Ooh,
and
nice.
the movie, like the movie Super 8 that was out a few years ago, he's another person who I just like bow at the altar of, and how he writes so many different genres of material in such an amazing way. But Bones, I wish I could give you a better succinct
I thought that was pretty
kind of
good.
review on it, but I loved the book and the world that he built. With a main character who's a little, well, is a little girl named Artemis Darth Vader.
I love it.
But it's I was captivated by it, and I don't read really quickly, which is like thank God for audiobooks. But I read that fairly quickly because I couldn't put it down. I had to know what came next.
Right.
So we will be talking to him as well. We do have. We tilt very much towards some romance folks coming off of GRL
Right.
with authors like Amy Lane and Anita Sunday, who isn't speculative at all, but she does a lot with astrology. So she's got a series that's like Scorpio versus Pisces, and that may not actually be a title, but she'll put two signs together and then. Make have them find their way to each other, even if they're like opposing signs who would, by astrology may not necessarily draw together
Yeah, I
easily.
was going to say Scorpio and Pisces are a good match, so.
Before the end of the year, we'll also have JP Barnaby back. She's unretiring from writing, which is super exciting. And we recorded with her back in September for when her new book comes out in December. So we're super happy to have her. She was on the show when she retired from writing a couple of years back, and now she's back to unretire, which is
Oh,
awesome.
she couldn't stay away. So if obviously if people want to connect with you, they can always watch or listen to your really great podcast. I do love it. But is there any other place online that people could connect with you if they want to, chat or find out more about your books?
Absolutely. There's, of course, the podcast is a Big Gay Fiction podcast. If you want to see all my books and stuff, you can go to jeffadamswrites.com. If you want to land directly on the Codename Winger stuff, there is codenamewinger.com too, in which you can just drop right onto those books. And then, usual suspects of Facebook, Twitter, Instagram.
All that fun social media stuff.
All that fun social media stuff, yeah.
Well, Jeff, it has been so great to finally get you on my show. I've done yours a couple times now, and as always, it's so much fun to talk to you. I think this is probably one of the longer interviews I've done so far. So, I just want to thank you so much for coming on and wish you all the best.
You're so welcome. I'm very happy to be here. And as I told you when you were on our show, we're so happy that you have this podcast and filling out this niche, because it's so important to have all the voices out there.
Oh, thank you so much. Well, I hope I talk to you again soon. Thank you so much for listening to the Bi Sci-Fi podcast. Join me next month when my guests will be author Heather Rose Jones, who writes historic fantasy adventure with lesbians, and is also part of the Lesbian Historic Motif Project blog and podcast. And also, we'll be talking about the Queer in Space Readathon from Yarn Owl Reads. And so, we'll have hopefully a lot of book recommendations for you and a lot to talk about with those two guests. Thank you so much again for listening, and we'll catch you next time. You've been listening to the Buy Sci-Fi Podcast. Find us online at buysci-fipodcast.wordpress.com and on Twitter at